What is going on with Damien?
This is probably the worst haircut I've ever seen anyone get. I'm talking
Hey,
worse than Walter Emanuel Jones and Brink. Hi, I'm Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shans.
and I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate. This season, we're looking at the worst superhero movies ever and seeing if they're fun or straight up dumb on
Cape or Cap, a bonus season of yet another DC animated podcast. Welcome to Cape or Cap, our bonus season here on yet another DC animated podcast. My name is Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate.
Andrew and I have known each other since 1996.
That was the year the Mighty Morphin Alien Rangers debuted. And you're wondering, what does that have to do with anything? Well, it turns out that that entire season was based on a ninja version of the Sentai. So it was a ninja Sentai converted to American aliens. And similarly to ninjas, Alien Rangers came, gone, and were quickly forgotten about.
Oh, man. And yes, we do know a lot about Power Rangers. We have already covered the movie. Check over the Pint podcast for that coverage on that. Oh, man. But that brought back some memories because that was also the weirdest story I've ever heard in my entire life. Spoilers for those who've never seen it, though I'm surprised you've never seen it at this point. Where the original Power Rangers got turned into kids and then had to go on these like serious quest in order to get the Zeo Crystal before they actually introduced the Zeo Crystal, like the concept of Zeo Power Rangers, in order to change back into adults. And then the alien Ninja Rangers were basically saving the day, crossing over seas of time and space, which is something similar that a line is actually very similar to what gets dropped in this film today that we're covering, because we are back in our DC animated world with a movie that we have basically badmouthed the entire time on this podcast. I can't count how many times we've actually brought up this movie in particular and put it in the ranks of like Wonder Woman Bloodlines and Batman Bad Blood. But today, y'all asked for it, because today we're getting Batman Ninja.
Yeah. Is it as bad as we've been advertising? Well, find out in just like 2 minutes. You're here already.
All right. So at a runtime of 85 minutes, this 2018 film was directed by Junpei Mizusaki. Not too many directorial stuff on Junpei's end. However, a lot of production credits, producer credits, that include an episode of Star Wars Visions and JoJo's Bizarre Adventures.
Hey,
Junpei also teamed up with some part directors such as Shinji Takagi, Junichi Yamamoto, and Shuhei Morita. Then for our screenplay, I'm kind of impressed. I hope I got those pronounced those right. For our screenplay, we got Kazuki Nakashima, who wrote the original Japanese screenplay, a name that is quite familiar in the Sentai and Kamen Rider worlds. And it's some great anime, because Kazuzuki is the mind behind Promare, Kill la Kill. And honestly, this is one of my favorite anime shows of all time, Gurren Lagann.
Underrated.
Yes. And while Nakashima wrote the original Japanese screenplay, we have Leo Chu and Eric C.S. Garcia providing the English screenplay that we're reviewing today on this podcast. And they're the minds behind Disney's limited series as a quote unquote, because remember what I like to call canceled shows now. They wrote Super Ninjas, that's SUPAH, that actually starred Ryan Porter.
Oh, yes.
Netflix's Alexa and Katie. I think this is currently going on, Disney's Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion. And finally, Adult Swim's Afro Samurai.
Yes, Afro Samurai. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Sam Jackson.
We got some animation work done by Basara Entertainment, who was responsible for the sword fights that we see throughout the film. Lapis Inc. and Kahara Inc. that handled the CGI, and then a bunch more studios that teamed in to handle the general animation throughout the film. All right, now time for our cast list. As we got Roger Craig Smith, who has definitely voiced our Batman in the past, more so connected to the Batman Unlimited storytelling. He's back again now for Batman Ninja. I just wanted to make sure you're okay with me mentioning Batman Unlimited in this podcast.
We're here, aren't we? We're in the worst of the worst.
Fred Tatasciore is voicing Gorilla Grodd and Deathstroke. Tony Hale is the voice of the Joker. Gray Griffin is the voice of Catwoman. Tara Strong is voicing Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy. Tom Kenny, a.k.a. SpongeBob, is voicing Penguin. Eric Bauza is Two-Face. Bane is actually voiced by the... something that I found out about is this movie was produced in English and Japanese. So Bane in particular, he is voicing... His voice is the same voice that is in Japanese as Kenta Miyake. Yuri Lowenthal is voicing Robin. In this universe is Damian and Red Hood. Gotta say that is a wild mix, but it kind of makes sense. Will Friedle is voicing Red Robin. Adam Crosdale is Nightwing and Alfred Pennyworth. Eon, who is a character who just pops up. We don't get too much dialogue for him, but is voiced by Matt Yang King. And finally, we got our two monkeys in the film. Monmi, who is voiced by the Japanese voice actor Juri Nagatsuma, and Monkichi. This was the one that I think probably was holding it down in this film for this crew, is voiced by Anna Mugiho.
Yeah, Monkichi put in some more work than some of the human characters in this film.
I could not agree more. and then also for the Japanese voice actors, we're not going to go through them. But again, this was done in Japanese as well. But some of the voice actors who are featured on there went on to do some more roles, such as stuff in Attack on Titan, Jujutsu Kaisen, JoJo's Bizarre Adventures, and a bunch of other shows. But we are talking about Batman Ninja in its English dub. So let's boom tube over to the beginning of this 2018 film, Batman Ninja.
As any great movie starts, you get some narration. Woo! Woo! Yes! With Catwoman saying, "You probably won't believe it. I didn't believe this story either." I think you'll agree by the time you get to the end. So Grodd is experimenting on something at Arkham Asylum. Catwoman and Batman happen to be there at the same time. And it turns out it's a time machine because they're all launched back into feudal Japan. And upon getting there, Batman is immediately on site, branded a criminal. He is a wanted man, and he has to fight off a bunch of Joker-masked samurai who are ordered to kill him on site. So, you know, Batman is ready to fight and evade. Unfortunately, in a really, I love these moments in superhero media, he tries to grapple away, but all the buildings are short, so he can't. So he is not going to go anywhere except the credits. Yeah, the credits are right here.
it's a pretty cool credit scene, I will say, because it's basically you see every person who is being listed as part of the film, none of the actual actors' names, because they do save that towards the end. But we see that the names are coming up on the blades of like swords from this like feudal Japan swords. And you're seeing all this done. You actually, in as opposed to most movies that are probably coming around this time, we're not actually seeing the full movie play out in the credit sequence, which I was thankful for, because it does add a little bit of mystery to it about like what's happening, how does Batman overcome this. So once that's all settled, Batman finds himself in the forest. He's trying to see if he can log in to any of his back computer equipment, try to get a GPS, and everything's coming up saying that it's offline, because of course Batman is trapped in the past. However, he does notice that even though he's in feudal Japan, there's a lot of stuff that's happening that seems a little ahead of his time. So he decides that the best course of action is to go to the building that has the most, I guess you could say, futuristic look to it. Basically, it just has like, it seems to be running on coal and everything. So as he arrives and uses I guess I would assume it's binoculars, which is weird because it was like it seemed like he had access to his computer and everything in that moment because he's able to pull up a file. We see on the corner of the HUD screen that he has that he identifies the Joker, and it's like details from the back computer file. But I'm confused, like how he was able to access it. It's like this. I wish the guy at least said like, "Hey, he has a local network at least in his." In his cape or suit or something.
Yeah, his Siri was established as being down earlier, so I guess he has like a memory bank. It's not really clear how he does that.
But as he sees Joker, Joker pops up right next to him, and it's revealed that the Joker that was off in the distance that he was looking at is actually Harley Quinn in the mask. And this leads into our first battle of the film. Or actually second battle of the film, because he had to fight against Grodd, but we don't really see that. But we see now this like full extent battle. Joker explains to Batman a little bit about how he got there. He tells him that Gorilla Grodd was using this device to bring them that accidentally went off and transported all of them to feudal Japan, where he has now basically taken over his own little thing. He's gone under the name now of the Lord of Hell or something like that, but he likes it just to be called Lord Joker, as he immediately starts attacking Batman. He's throwing out jokes, and some of them, just like some of the blows, none of them are really landing. So as Batman's trying to maneuver out the way, we see how much control Joker actually has when Harley Quinn pops out with, I'm assuming, the sake. I don't know, for him to drink, while his samurai henchmen are now attacking Batman and trying to kill him, as Joker just watches in awe of like his greatest nemesis now is here and he finally has a chance to have some fun.
Yeah, but the sharp fans, which they spent a lot of time explaining, and it's like we know how sharp fans work generally, almost get him. The samurai almost get him, but Batman manages to get away. In a cool framed shot, he hangs under a bridge like a bat as they all pass over him. How they didn't see him from the other side, I guess they have no peripheral
vision. Or at least in the reflection of the water.
You're right. Like, pretty easy. While under the bridge, Batman spots Catwoman in a kimono that leaves very little to the imagination.
PG-13.
An anime PG-13, I think. So he links up with Catwoman and finds out Grodd did it, which we kind of already know, but, you know, never helps you. It never hurts to be thorough. So it turns out that Catwoman and Joker, for some reason, arrived 2 years prior than Batman did in Japan. And other people, apparently everybody except Batman, arrived 2 years earlier for some reason. Don't know why, but they just did. And in that time, multiple villains have carved up territory in Japan. Penguin, Poison Ivy, Deathstroke, and Two-Face have all carved up their own territory. Two-Face has sided with Joker. And when I first heard this plot point and sounded like a plot point in Harley Quinn where the villains divide up the city. Similarly, this happens in Gotham. So it did feel familiar. And Catwoman agrees to work with Batman to get back to the future. And they need to break into Joker's main tower and get the time machine. So the first step to doing that is for Batman to go to his barber and have him just fuck his hairline up. I'm sorry, that's my PG-13, but that's Batman's head was destroyed here.
I'm glad you said that, because this film does a disgrace to hairlines. There is another character who I have so many questions about, but first we gotta talk about Batman's haircut, because basically what they did was, you would assume that maybe they would have just given him a little hat, like I don't know exactly what it's called that the missionaries wear, but what they end up doing is that he has on, they give him this haircut, and in the middle of his head is a bat logo, his own symbol. And I need to know, was this like, is this like the barber's work? Because I mean, A plus for that level of artwork, but why? Or does Batman have a tattoo of a bat on the middle of his head?
Yeah, it's like, also you're trying to be subtle, right? Like,
right.
I think the guy with the bat carved into his head that looks American is probably Batman, you know?
He even has a Bible in his hand that has the Batman logo on it. And it was just like, I'm sorry. At this point, it's like, it's hard to not say you're Batman. Like, you could have done anything else. So as he and Catwoman are just walking around thinking they have the greatest disguises ever, Batman sees that in what's being called Arkham Castle, which is supposed to be, apparently it's supposed to be Arkham Asylum, like the whole building from when at the beginning of our movie had also transferred to the past. So Joker turned it into his own, like his own headquarters. And he also has possession of the time machine as well in that place. The Quake Engine, this is called. Batman is noticing that a lot of the stuff that's coming in to that Arkham Castle is too much from the future. Like, it's a bunch of coal. And he's just like, all right, Joker's messing around with time. I'm surprised Barry didn't just show up and just be like, hey, that's my job. So as Batman is trying to figure out the next steps, they're at a tea house. And then as the next cup of tea comes out, Batman is shocked to drink it and see that's actually a cup of black tea instead of, I'm assuming, either jasmine or green tea at that time. And then this is when it's revealed that Alfred was also brought to the past, and that this whole time Selina has been hiding the secret of Alfred being there because she just wanted to play a trick on Batman and be like, hey, here's a prank. And I'm just like, I don't see how this is funny. I feel like my guy really thought that he had lost everyone. So like, if you lost your father figure, I feel like that would be the biggest hit of all, if you just found out that like he had been there this entire time.
Yeah, and because he mentions that he was in the Batmobile that night. Why? Because we know this Batman has Robins, multiple. Mm-hmm. We'll get there. So why weren't one of them in the Batmobile? Why did Alfred need to be there? I feel like we'll get to it. But he, luckily with Alfred, also comes a Batmobile. And as he's reunited with his Batmobile, cannons are fired on this impromptu Batcave, implying, I guess, that Joker saw Batman in civilian,
right, which would mean
wear?
That he has to know, right? I mean, it must have been the Bat logo that was etched onto his head. He must have been following this guy.
It's possible maybe his scouts saw, I don't know, but there's a gap there. So the Batmobile starts racing towards Joker's castle. And I'll give him this, another really creative moment. As Joker is narrating the chase that he can somehow see, he has a person with a scroll scrolling
that was
down.
Cool.
Yeah, that was fun. The scroll was just moving really fast. So they try everything to stop Batman. Joker uses a magnetized bump, some spikes. So Batman counters with a magnetized bumper. And when Batman gets close enough, Joker, he activates a castle, which turns into a mech, a giant mech in feudal Japan. This is the second reason I referenced Power Rangers earlier, because like Power Rangers, Batman Ninja has mechs, just giant mechs. How? I don't. No.
And we'll never know. because it also begs the same question about the Batmobile, which at one point gets hit hard enough by something. Because at one point, Joker is able to pull from the castle giant shurikens. This one's a little out there. I thought it was cool, but at the same time, it was just like, how did you produce this anyway? Like, in the point of where we are now. So he pulls up some giant shurikens, throws it at the Batmobile. This causes the Batmobile to get kind of hit. So Batman has to maneuver out. but he gets grabbed by one of the hands of Arkham Castle. So as it's being squished, Batman presses a button. The Batmobile then turns into the Batwing. And as it's round taking flight, oh, not the Batwing, the superhero, the Batwing, the thing. Yeah, just, I mean, it gets confusing people. We understand. Batman's flying around the Batmobile trying to maneuver. He is shooting bullets and everything, which makes me wonder. I'm assuming these are bullets that were just already in the car and in the thing, because I don't know how Alfred would have gotten bullets that would have worked with semi-automatic or rapid fire equipment.
I'll give it prep time, I guess.
I mean, yeah, you're right. They had 2 years. So as the Batwing is flying around, Joker takes, I think he has like some spikes on his on the mech arm as well that stabs through the wings of the Batwing. So Batman then presses another button, and this time it transforms into the Batcycle. And this is when I was like, this movie is made for the toys. I could tell.
It was giving really Batman Unlimited vibes.
Yeah. So as the Batcycle crashes into the room where Joker is in the Arkham Castle, Joker has one more ace up his sleeve as he shows that there is a woman on the ground who he is really willing to kill if he just presses a button that will cause the arm of the Arkham Castle to fall, crushing her. And he quotes, keeps saying, well, I mean, you are a hero, so you got to go and do what heroes do. As Batman turns the Batcycle around, he flies out the hole that he just made, and it's a visually cool scene, because as the hand is falling down, Batman is also falling alongside with it with the Batcycle, and then uses the, I guess, like the turbo boost on it to get himself down there a little bit faster, where he comes face to face with the biggest and probably the most jacked villain of this film, Bane.
Yes.
Or rather, Sumo Bane.
Sumo Bane, different Bane. Luckily for Batman, he turns his Pet Pod turns into a mech suit as well. an exosuit that he could use against Bane. So as he pretty much instantly defeats Sumo Bane, which I guess points for realism. As he goes to the victim, it's revealed again. It's just Harley. It's another fake out, and Batman gets cornered underneath a Joker's mech. His mech is crushed. Batman's personal bat suit. He gets hit by Harley with a hammer, and things are looking pretty bad for him. He has no tricks up his sleeve, no tech, no gadgetry. Luckily, an army of bats and a group of Batman ninja, inspired by Batman himself, save him. And they save him and bring him to another location where all the Robins are here. Damian, Dick, Tim, and it's a reveal that Red Hood is here, but not right here. At the time. And apparently all of this is because there was a prophecy that Batman would arrive and save all of Japan from an imminent threat. But I don't care about that, because what is going on with Damian? What is that?
Yo. This is probably the worst haircut I've ever seen anyone get. I'm talking worse than Walter Emanuel Jones and Brink.
Oh, man. And that, oh, look it up, people, if you haven't.
It's bad. It yeah, it's like if they were just like, hey, you have a lot of hair. What if I just shaved right down the middle? But not in the middle where it's just like I'm taking it from taking the razor at the face and just going all the way to the back. It's like, no, I'm going to go from one side of your ear to the other side of your ear. Full on like moon circle. And it's so bad. And I'm just like, I understand if this was like the hairstyle from back in the day. But I honestly feel like this was a joke that the rest of the Robins had played on him, because they all have full heads of hair.
Yeah, everybody else has regular haircuts. I don't think I even saw a civilian with the haircut that Robin was rocking. That I know at some point was the style, but I why would he do it of
Right.
all of them? Like Alfred doing it would have made sense almost, but not Damien. This haircut is truly ha horrifying. Speaking of things that are truly horrifying, Batman is told to meet Grodd in the Hot Springs, where Grodd is hanging out with chimps, which no, I
I'm
don't really know how I
assuming they're
feel about
supposed to
that.
be, yeah, I think they're supposed to be Japanese snow monkeys, but they're not white, so I know that it can't be snow monkeys, but they look like Japanese snow monkeys.
It just feels not okay.
It doesn't.
So Batman declines an invitation to get in the Springs with Grodd, but Grodd does reveal that he essentially invented time travel so he could send all of the other Gotham rogues away to a different time period where they couldn't interfere, which brings up a few questions. Why is Grodd in Gotham?
Right.
He's not a Gotham villain, typically. Two, where was he planning on sending them? Somewhere else where they would mess up the timeline?
Yeah, like the best course of action would be to send them to the future, because if you send them to the past, there's a strong possibility. Now we're getting into a little bit of time travel here. I knew this was going to happen. If you send them to the past, I feel like they would be able, because of the limited resources that was back in the day, they could easily have taken over, which is what they did in the last 2 years. So if you send them to the past, you make a strong, it's not going to be good for you trying to take over a Gotham that's most likely going to be influenced by their rule from the past. You should have sent them to the future where they can't do anything about the rule that you have established, maybe over a 50-year time period at the bare minimum. I mean, you send them all the way to feudal Japan, meaning that, like, if it works that way, it should work the even amount of years in the opposite direction, meaning that you would have rule way past your own life expectancy.
But again, I also assume that Grodd is smart and that if he sends them to the future, there's a possibility they could use his time machine to get back to where they need to go. So, I mean, this is what we're supposing here is essentially the plan Biff used in Back to the Future 2. But it works for Biff because he's not smart enough to think of the possibility that Marty could just undo it. But Grodd is. So I don't know where he was planning on sending them. But apparently he said Batman messed up the plan, so he kind of had to improvise here. And now he wants to work with Batman to get his control of the tower, control of his time machine, everything back. So this leads to a scene where Batman and his forces and his allies decide to confront Joker out on the open sea, like a One Piece scene. And during this action sequence, it's weird, but the music goes out randomly. I don't know why that happens in this scene.
I have a thought about that. But I'm gonna save it for later, because as we're seeing this whole thing play out, and it's good. I will say it was good music too. I felt like they captured some essence of like the energy that was being put forward. We see that they have Joker's side has established another leap in technology as they have. I think it was like rail guns basically attached to the ship, which I feel like is way more ahead than any even like current ships. And they shoot up the water, thinking that they hit every single member of the Bat Clan of Hita. This is the group that has been working with the Robins and has now asked Batman to join with them in this quest for good. So when this happens, Batman reveals, ha, I had prep time, and reveals that the ship that the Bat Clan of Hita has is basically a submarine. So everybody that they thought was being hit by the bullets was actually dummies that they had just crafted to show like these little pipes coming out. And now all of the Robins, except for Red Hood and Batman, along with this Bat Clan, are just creating straight up war chaos on Joker's ship. They're able to take down Joker and Harley Quinn in a really cool sequence, very anime like, where it's just like Batman and Gorilla Grodd team up. There are moments in which you see like Gorilla Grodd almost looking like he's about to get his like 13th power up before he gives Joker the mollywop. Some great scenes too, where Batman punches Joker hard enough that it causes him to kind of like do that classic anime spit take or something. So I was like, they did a great job in the sequencing and the animation and some of the scenes here. Unfortunately, though, when everything's about to get wrapped up, this is where we get the biggest double cross of all, because Gorilla Grodd reveals that he still has a trick up his sleeve as he pulls out his mind control head mind control machine thingamajig. I actually have never known what this was called.
the mind manipulator 5000, I think.
Every time I think of that, I think of Deathstroke in Teen Titans Go. It's like mind manipulation.
That's where he got it from, just from Grodd. So here it's revealed he tries to use mind control on the Bat Clan, but it's revealed that they're just immune. They can't be controlled.
Say, like, oh, so lucky with plot point armor.
Cool. So then that plan doesn't work, but Grodd has a backup plan. He turns out that he teamed up with Two-Face, and he orders them Two-Face to fire on the ship. Catwoman also jumped ship with Grodd. Literally, Grodd has a 5,000 feet vertical and is able to jump from his ship to Word. Another one. Was there any telekinesis, or did he just make that jump himself?
I think it's just Grodd is him. I think that's just what it is.
That's fair. So as the ship is going up, Batman wants to stay behind and capture Joker and Harley, who are on the top of the ship and refuse to get down. But he waits too long and fails the mission. It felt like a mission where it's like you're supposed to do a quick time event to jump off the ship and you don't in time, so you get blown up. But luckily, there are no consequences. It is revealed that each villain ended up with a piece of the time machine device. So that's another fetch quest for them. And this leaves Bruce in bed recovering. And shortly after recovery, it's a speech, a bizarre speech.
Yeah, it's really bizarre because the entire time Bruce is looking down at his hand and he's just like, I thought I had nothing. And it led me to trusting and believing in people like Grodd, because I had lost so much when I first arrived here that was just like, I don't have any of my technology, so I have to rely on just unconventional means. And that unconventional mean led to like a big breach of trust. Because now all of his villains have won. And then this is when, like, the poignant music kind of starts, but it does not get played loud. this is something that kind of irked me a lot. Because as Batman's giving the speech, he's just like, but you know what? I got my skills, I got family, and I got the Bat Clan of Hita who's got me. And I was just like, you just met them. They don't actually got you. You don't even know what they got.
And this is nothing? This is what you call having nothing? You have a lot of resources.
If I was Eon, who was the leader of the Bat Clan, I would have been like, yo, bro, like, literally, I could just take my whole entire squad and leave. We thought you were the one, but clearly you don't believe in us. We don't believe in you anymore. But Batman's having this whole conversation. It's revealed that he's actually having it with Nightwing. It's actually not for the viewer whatsoever. It's just for Nightwing. And then more of the Robins pop up and he's just like, we're going to use, and it's a really weird sense of dialogue, because he's like, we're going to use their resources and bring it alongside our resources. We're going to take it over. And it sounded very imperialistic of you, Batman, mm-hmm. but, and he's like, we're going to bring their legend of me into a reality, and then it turns into a completely different movie in the following scene.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, aren't you guys already ninjas? I mean, I get
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Like, they're like, we'll adapt the techniques of ninjas. You consistently do, though. It's unclear what techniques you're talking about that you want to adapt. Because they haven't really done anything like that impressive that you couldn't
yeah.
do.
It's like, at this point, you're just trying to... It almost felt like he was trying to justify cultural appropriation, which is like, you've been doing it for so long. And it's just like, no, I haven't done that. I've never had ninja skills. And it's just like, you use smoke bombs. You use hand-to-hand combat. You use the shadows to your benefit. I'm missing the part where you're not ninjas.
Yeah, like, come on, guys. I don't think that line came out like you wanted it to. But as you say, at this point, we go to a different movie. The animation style changes into a basically pencil animation style here. I liked it for the first 20 seconds. I'm all for a very stylized animation change to say something very specific. For example, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
There's a scene where they're bouncing through the multiverse, and at one point their fight turns into from hyper-realistic to its own piece of paper. Kill Bill has a scene where it goes from live action to anime very effectively to depict a specific scene. Here, we have a pencil-drawn animation scene for a scene in which Red Hood finds Harley and Joker, who were presumed dead, in the countryside, and they both have amnesia. But Red Hood doesn't believe them, threatens to break Harley's arm and kill the Joker right there on the spot. All while this is in this pencil drawn animation. So if the idea here was that it switched to pencil to represent the Joker's and Harley's mental state after losing their memories, the scene should have been from their perspective and not Red Hood's.
Yeah.
But this is a very Red Hood driven scene. And again, as I always say with movies, I love when you give the viewer leeway to fill in the gaps and string some motivations together. Yes, you can assume most people watching Batman Ninja know the story of Red Hood. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you needed in this scene one line where Jason says, "Hey, remember that time you almost killed me? Well, I'm returning the favor." Just one line. I'm not asking for a whole retelling of Red Hood, but I thought it was a real missed opportunity for someone who might be less familiar with the Red Hood to, or, you know, someone new to the universe to see this. They're going to think, oh, Red Hood is just angry. He's just going over. No, he has a very, very legitimate reason why he wants to kill the Joker right now. But they don't bring it up, and it's interrupted by Batman anyway.
Yeah, I agree. If watching it without any context of that history, the scene is very cringe because it's a very sudden tonal shift even, because it's like, you know, you assume that if you know nothing about Red Hood, you're assuming that this is somebody who was trained by Batman. So he's one of the Robins. Obviously, he's going to act kind of like them. But then it's just like he's literally just entering the scene to cause harm. And it's a lot. Because it's like they even show a scene in which he has somehow fashioned a gun through bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna even ask the questions about that. But he shoots Joker not like towards him. He does like intentionally miss that it does catch a little bit of the hairs. So then you start seeing Batman's intervention through the reflection of Joker's eye, like iris or something, and it's like it's visually cool to see as you see it like kind of like appear. So then we jump into the next scene where it's just like this lost memory version of Joker is explaining to Batman everything about who he is and how he came here. He knows that he lost his memory. He knows that his wife, that he's calling it, has lost his memory as well. And he just wanted a peaceful life. They've been noticing that, like, for what's been going well for them is working out in the field here. They feel like they are giving whatever negative energy they had in their life into the ground to bring up something new. And all they just really want is to just grow these plants that they have. And Batman's like, all right, I get it. You don't seem like the person I've been trying to fight against this entire time. It seems like there's some sense of rehabilitation. I'm sorry for what my colleague did. We'll just go on ahead and leave y'all be. And obviously Red Hood's just like, I don't understand how you can even think about leaving them behind after everything, which I agree. Once again, we needed at least a line to make that connection here to explain to somebody, because I'm assuming that this is not just made for a person who wants to watch a Batman movie and has all that context of who Red Hood is and all those other Robins in his story. But I'm assuming that it's the trying to bridge, make create the bridge to our anime watchers out there in the world. Because when you see this, it's like, this is an anime. This is basically what it is. In fact, I would even call this an isekai, where it's just like the characters are taken from their own plane of existence into another time or place. This is classic anime storytelling. So when you are trying to tell this story to people who don't know the history of it, you're missing out on some big things. So as they leave, we're leaving a lot of people wondering, like, what did we just watch in this, like, crazy different animation style? Characters have, like, gone completely cringy in their own ways. And now we see that Joker and Harley, they're celebrating over the fact that something is growing in their garden. And as they're rejoicing, you see that Joker is hugging Harley. He takes his hand, and as he wipes his nose, you see the red makeup style that was originally on his face has reappeared. And it seems like they're reverting back. Maybe it's either they have been playing this trick so well that they got Batman convinced that they had rehabilitated, or something else. As spores come up, I also forgot to mention there was, like, a whole other animation different scene where it's like Batman is learning how to that he experiences a montage a little bit, and it's almost done in like as if you're playing a video game and you're just going through the, you know, you can't have animated montage sequences. It's just like the two characters standing side by side, and you're hearing them talking, and you're seeing in the background the thing that they're supposed to be doing. So that was another animation shift that was kind of different for this. Like, I saw what they were trying to do. I think it was just too many shifts in a short period of time in this one particular middle part that leads into what's supposed to be the beginning of the conclusion of this upcoming battle.
Yeah, because if it sounded like we spent a lot of time on this, we have to point out here that scene was pointless.
Yeah.
The scene was super pointless. Without the context of Red Hood and his backstory in the scene, his confrontation with them makes no sense. So on that, purely on that level alone, this scene is pointless. But the implication at the end that they are insane, it could do something. It could have made a point, but there's a 1 month time skip. So it's pointless. If they were insane or not, it doesn't matter, because a month goes by where they haven't done anything, because nobody mentions the Joker in a month. So it's like, if you wanted to do the scene, if you ended it maybe like 2 seconds earlier before they start laughing, then at least we could have the question in the air of, does Joker have his memory or not? But they don't do that. They just keep going. And I mean, again, bringing up Harley Quinn again. Harley Quinn did this better, where Joker was found at a random bar. Spoilers for Harley Quinn season 2. But he's found at a random bar after falling into an acid that reverses his Joker tendencies. And the episode in which she finds him, she's ready to kill him, but he genuinely has no recollection. However, there are some aspects of his personality that are still coming out. Mm-hmm. But overall, he's not the Joker anymore. So she has to make the decision of whether to leave him alone or not. But here, there's no ambiguity. He is still the Joker at the end of the scene. or at least some trace of him. So, and this is a big scene before the climax, basically inserted to explain why Joker is not. The whole purpose of the scene, too, is also to explain why Joker is not involved with the other villains. But there's a month time skip, so it doesn't
Also, you could have
matter.
just easily just left it at the fact that like he died. Let's just say like they're under the impression that he and Harley Quinn had died during that explosion on the boat. You just leave it as that. And
Yeah.
then it'd be like, surprise, surprise.
That's all you have to do, because you're skipping ahead a month. I can't state how much this 1 month time skip makes everything pointless. Anyway, in that 1 month, Grodd rebuilt Arkham Castle. He has a moving castle, as long with every other warlord. They have a fully operated mechanized castle. Each one of them can become its own giant mecha. Who are the contractors?
The same ones that built the Batcave in Gotham, I'm assuming. This is their ancestors.
clearly. So, Batman, of course, he was waiting for this. He was waiting for the moment where all the crime lords clash at once, because apparently he knew that would happen. And he reveals that he, to take on this threat, has become Sengoku Batman, which should be cool, but there's no difference. It's just Batman with the sword, I guess.
Yeah, it really is just that. Yeah, it's funny too because he just looks more like a samurai than he does like a ninja.
Yes, he should have been Batman Samurai. So here, Grodd has his army. They all have gorilla masks. He's ready to attack. But his number two, Two-Face, turns on him, which I did find funny because it's like I kept hearing in my mind again, Harley Quinn. Sorry, a lot of Harley Quinn references today. But I just kept hearing, Two-Face, of course I betrayed you. My name is Two-Face. But it turns out Grodd, he had planned for this.
Yeah, it was just basically let me just grab him with the arm of Arkham Castle and then throw him at the other castle. Oh my gosh, Two-Face had it coming. It is wild. And as this is happening, we do see that the Bat family team here, they do fly into action because what they do is they have, as they're riding on their horses, they set up some like kind of like bat wings, not the plane, not the hero, actual bat wings on their backs, to take off into flight as the horses will bring them up, very similar to a kite. So once they let loose of the strings that were attached into the horses, it now gives them the ability to glide through all of this damage of all the villains fighting against each other in their mechs, and they try to see maybe if they can try and take down some in any way, shape, or form. However, Gorilla Grodd has it pretty much all handled, and what he ends up doing is revealing that he has another ace up his sleeve. Because when he, as all of them are on the ground, all the mechs are on the ground, and all their villains that are operating them are kind of like groggy, he turns on his machine, which leads to everyone getting mind controlled again, revealing that his big plan was one, to never return to Gotham, which is the reason why the Catwoman had joined up with him. It was to actually stay here, use the mind control villains to merge their castles, which he said that he had implanted the idea of creating these mech castles into their mind previously. That's a lot.
Inception.
And combining all of it to create a monstrous mech that will then create forever rule of monkeys throughout time. First off, I just want to say monkeys and gorillas are, they're not technically the same. Just want to make sure we all know that. I don't think that Grodd, I think as smart as Grodd is, he should have probably known that too. Big difference is a tail. So as they are trying to figure out what to do because the villains are being forced to merge together, Grodd is ready to play his what looks like a I forget what the name is. It's kind of like a Go, I think, is the game, but the
Yes.
pieces differ. So he's ready to place the final tile in order to complete the transformation. But surprise, surprise, Joker comes through. He throws in a Joker flower bomb, the same flower that he's been growing, and it knocks out everyone. Where now Joker and Harley Quinn are flying in on a hot air balloon with his face on it, and they take over the mech. They kick Grodd and Catwoman out, and now Batman and his family have to save Grodd and Catwoman from falling to their deaths. And they do. Batman's able to grab Grodd. Jason grabs Catwoman. Catwoman's upset that Grodd was saved first, but she was like, I'll be fine with that. As Joker lays the final tile to unite the five into the very much like in Power Rangers and every kind of mech anime we've ever had, combines the five to create the holy heavenly monster mech being of Lord Joker.
Yeah, all that happened. So you know what might as well also happen? Damien, who is uncharacteristically happy in this movie, uncharacteristically optimistic, he's way too excited about everything. This seems like something Tim Drake should have done, but never mind that. Damien and his best Pokemon, Munkachi, are able to assemble an army of monkeys who form into a giant sentient monkey-like robot titan. Batman immediately forgives Selina because that has to happen for the rest of the movie to happen. And as he does, the monkeys become this big, and they become this big titan. They're hit with flamethrowers and they can shield it. The monkey titan can shield it, but like a lot of monkeys die being literal monkey shields. So, it's randomly revealed that Joker and Harley planted the flowers and it restored their memory, which thanks, we got it. And now it's time for everyone to go on individual battles to fight the villains. And
I mean, I think you might have missed the biggest part of all, though.
please, my mind was went to mush at that point.
While the monkeys are creating unnecessary sacrifices of themselves, the rest of the Bat Clan of Hita arrive after taking on the rest of Grodd's forces, and along with them are a group of bats. These bats come together to form the Bat Signal in the sky, and they float down around the giant monkey, wrap around it, and when they all fuse together, yes, I said it right, fuse together, they turn into Batman. Bat God, as they call it in the movie, is basically the Japanese take, a Japanese illustration of Batman in 3D form, is black and white. Everybody's excited now that the Bat God is here. They now Joker's mech with the Bat God here. They send one final punch at each other. Bat God wins, which in his punch is able to release the team as they all go on to their individual fights with Batman versus Joker, Catwoman versus Harley Quinn, because, and I quote this, she said that she needed to take on some girl-on-girl action. PG-13. Then we got Nightwing versus Penguin, which I feel like is a slaughter. Like, that should not have been the fight. Red Hood versus Deathstroke. We got Red Robin or Tim Drake versus Two-Face, and finally we got Damian or Robin versus Poison Ivy.
Look, everybody wins, all right? Let me just save you some
Yeah.
time. Everybody wins their respective fights. If this was the only reason that all the Robins were brought here, what a wasted opportunity.
That was a wasted opportunity, yeah.
They should have been in the mech together, the five of them piloting a mech together, and then at least the
Yes.
joke would have worked. But they didn't do that. So now only one one-on-one remains, Batman versus Joker. And this may be the longest Batman versus Joker fight I have ever seen. It goes on way too long.
Yeah, it's at least 20 minutes, I feel.
Yeah. And at one point, Batman gets stabbed, but it's revealed it isn't real. It's an illusion. Joker just stabbed an illusion. And Batman just keeps using illusion genjutsu. Something he could have used conceivably at any point in the fight, but just waited to do it for dramatic reasons. I hate this because the implication that Batman needs extra skills to defeat the Joker in a straight fist fight is crazy. It's crazy. That's the easiest part of Batman's Joker. It's the fight is always the easy part. It's just getting to the fight that is hard. So the fact that he had to bring out extra tricks to just beat the Joker, ridiculous. Ridiculous. And at one point, he is at this long, long battle, is given the opportunity to drop Joker into the flames, and he does. He just saves him afterwards, so he gets the satisfaction of doing it.
He lets him sweat a little.
A little bit. But there it is. The battle is done. Alfred, you still with us?
I forgot he was in this movie. So yes, now that they have taken down all the villains, it's time to return home. They activate the Quake engine, say goodbye to the Bat Clan of Hita. I don't know if this means now that they're the prophecy being fulfilled. Does this mean that they now just disband? Do they just continue on with the faith? Like, I feel like when you're a part, this very much felt like a cult. And the fact that, like, the prophecy happened, I don't think there's a way to just go back and do whatever you just did before. Like, this seems like they've been doing this for years. Like, it's weird. So they use the engine, and as it opens up, that's it. That's just the credits. It's revealed, I guess, in the post-credit, not in the post-credit scene, but through the credit sequence, I guess it's revealed that they just basically brought back everything, including the damaged robots and mechs and buildings, right in front of Commissioner Gordon and I believe Bullock as well. So that's basically how our movie wraps up. There are two post-credit scenes that kind of intertwine. The first one is kind of a callback to the beginning of the film, where Bruce was supposed to be heading to an event that the mayor was having. So he tries to, Alfred is there now to meet him in an actual tuxedo for him to change into, and reveals that, like, hey, I actually have a nice car for you, a nice vehicle for you to use, and it's a horse-driven Batmobile.
Har har.
Yeah. And Catwoman also sells some antiques, because it's revealed that during her time with Grodd, Grodd did something where he took a banana peel and threw it into a vase or vase of some sort. And because technically it is an antique or antiquity, I think the term antiquity applies here, she's able to sell it. And they show that Eva still has the banana peel in there.
Okay, great. I'm glad we spent time doing that. So normally for animated movies, there isn't too many details behind the scenes of the production. And this is not an exception, but there is one factoid I found about behind the scenes about why things might have gone a little off the rails for Batman Ninja. But before we get there, is there any comic relevance of Batman Ninja? Is this a comic? Was this inspired by anything?
Nothing at all inspired this film. This is an original screenplay. The closest I could find is the history of Bat Manga.
Okay.
This is a book that was put together back in 2008 officially as a paperback or and a hardcover, with a book designed by Chip Kidd. But it collects the stories. This book is called Bat Manga, The Secret History of Batman in Japan. It collects stories, 53 chapters of Batman in Japan, because at the time of Adam West's era as Batman, there was a huge jump in Batmania. in Japan, leading to the Jiro Kuwata to craft 53 chapters of this manga with Adam West's Batman operating in Japan. And the stories were just basically called Batman or Batoman, written out in Japanese letters. It ran from April 1966 to 67 of May, and it only stopped because Batman Craze had died in Japan that year.
Something else cool came out.
Yeah. So yeah, for a while, for what seemed to be almost like 40 years, nothing was happening with it. It was translated at one point and put into a Chinese graphic novel or a manhwa. And then later in 2008, as I mentioned, it finally got that release into a paperback edition. And then soon after, it was all 53 chapters were collected into three volumes that you could pick up today in Japan. And this was actually written out in Japanese. So we only got the English translations of these in July of 2014 when they were released weekly on Comixology. Hashtag not sponsored, but I would definitely say it's a great place to read digital versions of any of these comics. Like, I've caught up on so much comics because of it. Really, again, not sponsored. but they released the English version of it there. So right now you can find it in Japanese, English, and probably in this this Chinese manhwa, but definitely in the more so in the earlier two. But none of it actually has ever told a story about Joker building a mech and using hypnotism in order to trick Batman or Red Hood being so aggro in a sense without any context.
I'm shocked. Okay, so no comic book basis. So here's the thing. Batman Ninja was originally crafted in Japan. And, you know, the dialogue, everything was in Japanese. When it was brought to America for the dub, the co-writers of the American film who were responsible for the translation, according to them, they received a 6-page script detailing the beats of everything that happened in the story in Japanese. And they said it made no sense. So they just made their own story to make Batman Ninja make sense. So the English version uses the same scenes as the Japanese version, but the script is completely different. I tried to research what the differences might be because I did not have the time to rewatch Batman Ninja subbed. But no one's bothered to really do it. So I can't tell you what this movie actually is, but this movie is a completely different movie in Japan.
I guess I have to reveal a secret now. I found it and watched it.
So what is it? What is it in Japan?
Can I just say the dialogue is significantly better? The scenes are the same. There isn't much difference that I really was able to find, except just like, yeah, some dialogue notes are very different in terms of like Batman's speech when he's on that cliff. The biggest difference that I saw, they actually had music scored to it.
Oh.
So that's what I was thinking. That's what I was mentioning about like the difference of like when you heard the music come up and they just got rid of it. And I saw the biggest difference in it is that the English version tried to focus on the speeches that they had, but the Japanese version really tied it well with their music. That's really just it. I guess also Alfred was a little bit more useful. Like he had the same amount of scenes, but he actually explained how he made black tea by fermenting green tea, and I was like, that's a pretty interesting thing. And apparently he also has a hookup to Western food, so that's how he was able to keep Selena fed. And I don't know why Selena felt like she couldn't eat anything in Japan.
Seems racist, Selena.
That really does. But yeah, honestly, those are really the big differences. Just Alfred having a better understanding of how to, I'm assuming, smuggle in Western food. And the music was really the only big differences that I saw. But overall, more or less, the dialogue was pretty much the same. Like, I would say don't invest too much in trying to find it. If you want to watch it, it's very hard to actually pick up in America, I realized, because I was very upset about this. I rented the copy of it, and because it was like, it was saying it came in two versions, English and Japanese, on Amazon. And then when I played it, the only audio they had available were English dialogue boost high and English dialogue boost medium.
What? Why is medium even an option?
That's what I needed to know too. And it was just like, they really were just like, nah, we don't want the music. And it was like, the music really helped to make a difference in this film. But beat for beat, it's pretty much the same. But I can see where it's just like, if they were missing some parts of the script, they definitely had to just make something out of nothing. And yeah. This is not my fight to say watch sub over dub. But like in this case, actually watch sub probably. If you enjoy score music in your movies.
I think that's fair to say because, yeah, I'd like to see the original intent of this. And I feel like you get a little bit closer with that sub. But so there you have it, Batman Ninja, after all this time. I know this is going to be a hard decision, but is this a cape or is it a or is it is a ninja cape or just a cap that needs to cover what the hell was going on with Damien's head?
Okay, this was actually a little tough for me. But not because we haven't given a cape to a movie yet in this universe. But visually, I will give this movie a cape. Dialogue is straight up cap. English dialogue is straight up cap. Nothing in it really makes sense. The execution of some aspects of it is just really kind of like off in some cases. Like, it really did upset me that we didn't get actual scenes of just like Batman being trained by these ninjas from the Bat Clan, when it was like they kind of made it like a big deal that they needed to work alongside them. And then instead, we just got like a 20-minute sequence of Jason Todd abusing Joker and Harley Quinn. Pacing also just seemed very wild because, like, from the beginning, it did not stop. We were 35 minutes in, and that felt like at least a season of DBZ. Like, it just didn't stop. It was just like Batman just kept fighting. Like, this in 35 minutes, we saw Batman versus Grodd, Batman versus Joker in the forest, Batman meeting with Selina, Batman versus Arkham Castle, and finding his colleagues to save him. Batman teaming up with Grodd, Grodd's betrayal. And this is, again, this is 85 minutes. We had more than an hour left in this film, and so much was already covered that it just feels like too much got thrown into the beginning. So we lost track of what could have been middle parts. Like, that could have easily been the middle part with the whole Grodd twist and everything. And then just immediately jump to him having a speech on the hill, maybe show a little bit of training. Maybe you could do the 1 month later to explain that it took some time for them to build out the castles and whatnot. But it just felt like too much got shoved into this film. I would also say too that like it's I did not like the Joker reveal of him being like, I hypnotized myself to hide my true intent from you. When we kind of talked about it, you could have easily just said that Joker, they were under the impression that Joker was killed. Batman had to recover from that time, realize how much he lost, how many things were being sacrificed. Because that would have been great if you just said Joker was killed off and we're back to our original villain who started this whole entire film. And that could have been it. That really could have been it. Other than that, I would say the fight scenes, some fight scenes are good. Were kind of fun to watch. Like, even though the Batman and Joker fight went on really long, I think there were some visually cool scenes. Like when I think the dust smoke cloud kind of passed by, there was a scene in which they were both fighting against with swords, and you saw the hits of the swords shining through the shining through the smoke. And also when I think when Joker got hit pretty hard, he kind of rose back up and almost seemed like as if he had transformed into a more evil version of Joker. Like, I get the intent that they were trying to do, try to tie it in with these like Japanese anime aesthetics, but some stuff just seemed too clunky, and I wonder if maybe we just trying to change the way that the art style was. Like, I liked it, but I feel like for fight scenes like that, it's a little hard to do. And I kind of wish we kind of jumped into more of what we saw really actually in the very beginning of the film, I think it was, and also Selena's part, where it's a 2D animation, very much like what we see a little bit from like Jujutsu Kaisen or like Attack on Titan. Just give us some flat animation, but very detailed. Let whoever is animating that just cook with the fight scene and they'll be all right. But that's for me. Cap for the dialogue, and it's a very weird middle ground. Cape visuals are great, but dialogue needed some help. But ultimately, I will give it a cape. It's a very small cape, though. You kind of convinced us. I see why people enjoyed it, but to me, it still needs its moments to fine tune. What about you, cape or cap?
I really went in here wanting to give it a cape for the uniqueness of the script, or maybe the Japanese version might have something. But two caps,
Two
both
caps.
versions, one for Batman's head, one for Robin's head. This movie, the pacing in this movie is so bizarre. What they choose to spend time on is so bizarre. There is, quite frankly, no reason why we didn't see the opening battle of this movie. Why don't we get to see him, like Batman, run into Arkham Asylum and all the villains are in cells? And then when he turns on the machine, they are all transported. Why did he need to do this in Arkham? Rod is not a Batman villain, guys. I gotta keep saying it. Batman has a lot of villains, but one of them is not Grodd. Why Arkham specifically? It would have been cool to say there was a geographic location, a reason. Why did they go to Japan when they went back? And Gotham is located in New Jersey most of the time. How did they get to Japan even? I don't understand the beginning of the movie, which makes it really hard to understand the rest. Again, I won't go back to the Red Hood thing. We've beaten that with a crowbar to death, but
Oh, I
this movie has way too many characters as well. We didn't need all of the Robins. We certainly didn't need the four villains who spend most of the movie doing nothing until we get to the end, and then they're immediately mind controlled. So they could have been anybody. Yes. So there's just so many. There's just so many things that are bizarrely spaced out in this movie. I really don't even know what the intent was. What I can say here is that if you're really curious and you want something different from a Batman story, I'd rather you go watch Merry Little Batman. I'd rather you go watch Beware the Batman, because I can understand the intent of those things. As much as I might not agree fully with every alternate Batman story, I can see what they're going for. A Gotham by Gaslight, kind of thing. So my art alteration is pretty similar to Gotham by Gaslight. Just set it in this era. Just set it here. Right. It's a Bruce in the past. He has Robin apprentices. He has an Alfred. He has a Catwoman. Joker is the big emperor Mongol taking over everything. And, he leads this revolution based on a prophecy, of Batman. Because also the prophecy with Mex, it's really hard to do both at the same time. And it didn't work here because, it's funny, Power Rangers does this all the time where they have prophecies and also giant mechas. But it's established that Power Rangers has been going on for so long, and there have been so many versions. I can accept the blending of those two things because there was magic in the past. Here, we never get an origin of the prophecy. We never get anything from it. And so my alteration set it in this time period. Fully commit to it. If you're scared of fully committing to it, if you want tech and mechas and everything like that, because actually, I think it'd be even. I would be more willing to accept if it was magic that turned them into mechas, than technology brought from the past, retrofitted to Japanese homes. But yeah, if you really wanted a twist, you could have it that in like at the halfway point, they all realize that they're from present times and their memories were just addled through the time travel process. And now the last half is them all trying to get back home. You could do that. I know it's War World, but better.
But that's the part. That's part, but better. That's the key part. But better.
Yeah, I just don't think we got much from them going back in the past and having that whole prologue. It just didn't, none of that really worked. And I think there are great opportunities, as just one example, if it was time period, you could have Red Hood show up and Batman could be like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "I was beaten by the Joker severely, so severely I never show my face," because his face is never shown, right?
Yeah, and that was something that I also had some issues with for the film too. Some of the character designs. Like, again, I think for Red Hood, I don't know what it is exactly, but I'm assuming that it does have a connection to historical Japan where, but it's that giant almost what looks like a paper lantern is just on his head. And I thought that was weird. I really would have. Because then at one point he does lift up his mask and he shows that he has on another mask underneath it. And then to me, I was just like, why didn't we just give him like maybe an Oni mask or something? Like have him dress up more like a ninja, give him the Oni mask. That way it still looks a lot like Red Hood because I don't know if it's because they were trying to find a way to differentiate him from Red Robin. Which at that point, just choose the Robins. It's either Red Hood or Red Robin. Don't include Damien because that hairstyle should not have been put on film. Just give us something like that. And it did feel like it was a little extra compared to it felt like they were just disrespecting the Robins that they'd known to have aggro issues. And it's like, why do that if you could have just easily. Especially if they're supposed to be ninjas now after being with the clan for 2 years, I would assume that the point would be for them to be inconspicuous. Like that is very conspicuous when I see Red Hood walking down the streets.
Does it make sense to have so many Robins? It really
Yeah, it
doesn't.
really doesn't.
They're just far too many Robins in this film, and they don't get enough to do except for Damien. And I'm yeah, again, I've beaten the Red Hood thing to death just the normal way. So
Yeah, I was like,
I
we have an allotment of crowbars in this
will
podcast.
Yeah. One more. But yeah, I think treating the lore would have been cool. Like one more thing I'll throw out there and then I'll leave it alone. But again, if it's time period, each Robin, if you want all of them, what the potential this could have had. Imagine if Tim Drake comes in and says, Batman has adopted all these Robins that have been displaced or harmed personally by each one of the crime lords. So, Nightwing comes in and says, "Well, Penguin paid to have my parents killed. We were traveling performers." And Batman's like, "I took him in after his parents were killed by traveling performers, but on Penguin's order." Two-Face and Tim have a thing. Link them up. Obviously, Red Hood and Joker have beef. And instead of Poison Ivy, whose powers aren't really used well here, Talia, just put Talia in there. And Talia
Yeah.
can be all the baggage that comes with Damien.
Honestly, Damien can even still work with oh no, well Deathstroke is more so with Nightwing, yeah.
And
I was
Deathstroke
thinking
was
because
barely used in this movie anyway, so take him out.
yeah. Like honestly, I feel like he was just thrown in to show that like he pays for it. Because like there was this one scene in which he's just hugging up on the woman, and it's just like, all right, like that's weird. I don't know what's happening in your mech castle, but sir, we have to fight a battle right now. But yeah, it's just it definitely feels as if none of, like you're saying, like none of the Robins really kind of like connected with their villains. The only people who seem to have connected with their villains, because they built out throughout the film a reason for them to connect, was Harley Quinn and Catwoman, because at multiple times they fought against each other, each going where each one had one battle before the last time, and then like this last battle was supposed to be it. Like, who's gonna take it all? Do that whole scene again, take out the line about girl on girl action. That felt like it was just pandering to try to say that, like, hey, both of them are attractive, so this is what the viewer wants to watch. And it's like, meanwhile, these are the two baddest like fighters in like as of late within the DC universe. It could just be that like the two of them have just been going at it this entire time, and they're like, we really need to settle this, because at some point one had pissed off the other enough that they were upset that they lost the last battle. But yeah, so as Batman Ninjas, people have asked and questioned us to review. I guess the official ruling is, though, that it is mostly Cap. So we're never going to talk about this again, unless it's just to ridicule its scenes. Especially that I'm never going to forgive them for dropping that girl on girl action line. That was just really weird, and was really cringe. More cr almost as cringe as the Red Hood scene.
We're collecting cringe lines, and that includes I still don't know if it's worse than women have been doing a lot of saving around here. We should call this the X Women. I
X
think
Women.
that's still there, but on our sliding tier, Dragon Ball Evolution is still in hell. But honestly, is this the best of the worst that we've seen this month?
Man, this is all right. This is going to be the official ruling. I think right now for me is actually a weird tie for different reasons between this and Suicide Squad. And I'm
Honestly,
oh,
that's fair.
yeah, I'm only saying it because Batman Ninja is wonderful to look at. You could literally play it in the background with no volume, and people would think you have some artwork on your walls. Like, it's visually great. I'll give it that. And I know that a lot of people tend to gear towards defining a great movie as its visuals, but for me, that's just not what it is. I need to hear what's going on. And honestly, I would prefer not to hear what's going on in this. But yeah, now I think it ties up with Suicide Squad for number one spot of Cape or Cap films that we have covered this month. So what about you? What are you thinking?
This is an actual movie. It was an attempt that didn't succeed fully. So for that, I feel like I will put it at the top above Suicide Squad that was hacked to pieces, above Dark Phoenix that is just boring. Because I can say I wasn't bored. I can say that much for Batman Ninja, and it moves quickly enough. So top of the trash. So it's at the top of the trash pile. Dragon Ball still is roasting in hell. I just want to assure everyone that's where it belongs, and I'll never leave there. Home for infinite losers.
Oh, and speaking of X-Men Dark Phoenix, don't worry, Andrew, we don't have to cover any more of the X-Men films in the last. But someone did reach out and did mention the dialogue that actually, or kind of language that does get better when spoken loudly or while in pain, is patois. And I can 100% agree with that.
All right.
All right, so that's going to wrap up our episode here today. Join us next week as we jump back into the Tomorrowverse with the coverage of Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2. That is right. It's finally coming out after months of waiting for a timeline of when it will arrive. But we're definitely going to be covering it to try to finally wrap up the Tomorrowverse. Again, though, because it will be a three-parter, we do not know when we will cover Part 3. All right, so be sure to support us either through our one-time gift on Buy Me a Coffee or monthly through Patreon. Check us out on our socials for updates on our episodes that you can find across Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and any other platform you find your podcast. Take care of yourselves, and remember that if you go to a barber and they give you the haircut that Damien has on here, you are legally allowed to fight them.
Yes. And if you're sent back to feudal Japan and you have access to a mech, start with that and figure out the rest later.
Thanks again for listening. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and share us with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and on social media at YADC Animated Pod.